time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end? And where go the echoes of our laughter ringing the air? Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there. I will see you.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronik, station advisor here, as well as host of our public affairs show. We talk about local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. And I'm joined in the studio by my co-host, Dennis Reimars. Hi, Dennis.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, your mic works. That's always good.
Does it?
Right. Yeah, we love this.
I can just yell.
It's DIY radio.
Do it yourself.
Yeah, do it while you're on the air in some cases. And a very, very special guest, one of two that we expect for this hour. Yes, live in the studio, we have the man, the legend, Dan Merritt.
Wow. So
welcome back to WHFR, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
I hear, hey, Dennis, hi. And you're the man, the legend.
Wow.
Well, special guest.
Very
you know,
much so.
You're here mostly every week, Dennis.
Yes, I am.
It's old news like me, you know.
Wow.
But we say welcome back because Dan is here as the co-owner of Green Brain Comics. They're very famous in the Detroit area. Metro Times best comic store in the Detroit area, 4 years plus running.
Five
now, yes.
Wow.
Got to update your website. And
oh,
so gosh. we're going to talk about what Dearborn has done to small business people like Dan and Green Brain Comics over the years. But especially
not two, Jay, four.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Got that wrong. Right. Good PR. That's right. He is either the vice chairperson or the vice president, depending on the website you find, for the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority, EDDA, or EDDA, or as he told me, it's now referred to more briefly as just ED.
The mayor loves ED.
Okay. Well, the talking horse from the 50s? Okay.
I want to ask you, your ties to the college are very strong and to the station. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, to the college itself, I've only been an alumni of one class, and that was the training class for WHFR.
Is there
staff.
Another class?
There are other classes.
Okay, all right.
Not in my curriculum.
Okay.
And what did you do with the station? What did you do with that certificate once you were able to go on the air?
Once I got the diploma and mounted it onto my office wall, I was the host of a program here on WHFR Sunday afternoons from 5 to 8 called Graphic Music.
Wow.
It was a three-hour programming dedicated to soundtracks.
I like that.
Yeah, you know, it's I pushed the boundaries a little bit on the theme. I went for movie soundtracks, cartoon soundtracks, TV soundtracks, theoretical soundtracks.
So this might be a soundtrack, maybe not. Hey, for this show, it is, right?
Hey, if it's a music bed for some other type of media, it's a soundtrack.
I agree.
Well, we always like our volunteer DJs, and we pay them nothing. They're worth a fortune. They're the essential part of WHFR. All of our volunteer staff here is what keeps us going. We'd like to use the special abilities, insights, knowledges to offer music that isn't available elsewhere in the Detroit dial, and Dan's experience with Green Brain Comics, starting, by the way, in the same year as WHFR, 1985, 26-year history, going on 27, and so that knowledge about comic books and fantasy movies, TVs, he brought in, of course, many, many special guests and had many interviews with guests related to that. And of course, there's plenty of music attached to that. Now Rob Campo does a show on Thursdays from 7 to 9 that still features movie soundtracks and often sometimes anime cartoon music. Music, that would be an insult, right. I guess, but
not at all.
In fact, fantasy and
very eclectic
animation music that is not featured elsewhere, but by golly, it's out there, and a lot of people listen to it either as part of the other media or by itself. And so, Dan, I really want to thank you for the, you said 5 years you were here at WHR with that show, and that was just about 7 or 8 years back. Six years back?
Not too long ago. It feels like just yesterday. And I would like to give a shout out to Rob and both of his bees for riding my coattails for the last 8 or 9 years. Good job, Rob.
That's right. You started it all, and he tried to continue the tradition.
I believe he starts every show with a little homage to you.
Yeah. It is a...
Well, it's only
it's
fair.
Then ended with a little air kiss.
It's just very discreet.
I love you, Dan.
Sure.
Well, other than that one class here at the college, Dan, let's talk about how your business got set up and then lead into the business-related organization of this East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority. Educational background?
Educational background pretty much stopped with high school education, of course, except for the WHFR staff training class.
Okay, but somehow you decided to set up a business. Somebody give you an idea or special insights or help?
Well, to be honest, I walked into a business that was already existing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
In 1985, the store was part of a chain owned by Gary Reed, who was not only a comic retailer but also a comic and graphic novel publisher. Mm-hmm. My wife, Katie Merritt, had worked for him since the early days of the store. I think she started in 88, something like that. I think she just celebrated 22, 23 years, something.
So it was a bookstore before?
Comic book store.
Comic book store before, okay.
Yeah, it was.
You know, I lived here since 79. I wasn't aware of what was it called?
It was called Comics Plus.
Oh, I just vaguely remember that name. So it wasn't. Wasn't as successful or as famous as what you've done. So you followed his model and his business plan, sort of, and then developed a new concept, a new name for the store, of course.
Well, yeah, we used the Comics Plus structure as a starting point.
Okay.
Gary was very supportive of small press, as well as all the existing publishers, but really focused on the diversity of the product available. And we took that as our starting point. And
that wasn't in the same location.
No. Well, when Almost. We bought it, we stayed there. Let's see. It was on the 14,000 block of Michigan Avenue, about a half a mile east of where we're located right now.
Okay. Location is everything.
It was about 1,000-foot store. Okay. We grew out of it pretty quickly, and moved into our current location almost 9 years ago now, shortly before the destruction or reconstruction of the Michigan Avenue corridor in East Dearborn.
Which set you back in sales for about a year and a half or 2 years. It went on much longer than thought, because of the sewer replacement that they came up with. They discovered they needed to redo some of the major, there's telephone, all kind of electrical things under Michigan Avenue.
Because of the nature of the main trunk of Michigan Avenue, it had some very ancient facilities underneath it, which took a long time to repair and recreate.
Just so people in their minds know where Green Brain is today in that location, but the landmark I always think of, it's just west of the Pizza Hut restaurant, but other east, what are other stores? Yeah. Just east.
We are three blocks east of Schaefer Road. We're
north
across
side.
The
north side of the
road, indeed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Across the street from one of my personal Dearborn monuments, Jim's Place, if
oh,
you're
yeah?
into American Polish food.
Mm. Yeah, my daughter loves that place, and she's threatened to take me there. I'm sorry, I don't like Polish food. But,
really?
But Jim's Place may be the best ever, so maybe I ought to try it, to say.
It's just good, fine, comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out.
And uniquely... unique food in the area. I mean, there's some other Polish restaurants, but certainly Jim's Place does have a great reputation. So it's just across the street from Jim's Place. Okay. So you've always probably liked comic books. Even in high school, you probably went to Comic Books Plus when it was there in the other location yourself. And then Gary Reed sold the place to you?
Yeah.
Is that what happened?
My wife
fact?
And I were mm-hmm. offered the place initially, you know, before he... really considered selling it or closing it down. He gave us the opportunity, and my wife was a little bit nervous about it, but I was in a job that I didn't have a whole lot of job satisfaction with.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I gently convinced her that it was the right move for me, or
yeah.
us, I should say.
Right. Well, it's tough becoming a small business person, but and I think we have some classes now that we didn't have before, some entrepreneurial type classes, in other words, how to become a small business person in our business area of the college. We didn't have those before. But you had no special training other than maybe a high school class in general business. It's amazing. But you just loved the topic, the subject.
Indeed. That's how I learned how to read. Comics.
Okay, there you go.
Comics
me too.
Brought me into the yeah. literary world, and you know, without them, I wouldn't be the person I am today.
That's funny. And today, there are comics on just about any subject, including the literary world. I mean, anything.
Yeah. It's not a single genre medium
at all.
It's not just superheroes. It's so much more.
Besides, my story is back in the early 50s, of course, when I was actually young then, very young. But it was besides the little golden books. It was classic comics. So I got my abridged introduction to the classic stories. I remember a version of Moby Dick, you know, that and many other stories. I think the Iliad, the Odyssey. It's quite an insult to those great classics to have them abridged so much. But, of course, they came alive because of the pictures.
Right.
And so I was never afraid of the classic literature when I got older and had a chance to read it in high school and certainly in college, because that introduction was so positive, you know. And is that still out, classic comics? Are they still around or not anymore?
Not as new work as okay. they existed, mm-hmm. but there are still a few publishers that use the classics as source material for adaptations.
If I just would have saved those issues,
yeah, no
it'd probably be worth a fortune. I had to put them,
well,
I had to put them in plastic or something.
Yeah.
Yes, well, of course, there's a quality issue. It's not just an old comic is worth something automatically, you know.
But I did find out something interesting recently. Classics Illustrated, of course, the bane of the teachers back in the 50s, but
mm-hmm.
they did very well. They mm-hmm. did phenomenally based on, you know, kind of a compressed version of the classics. But they were actually almost put out of business or completely put out of business by the introduction of the Cliff Notes.
Wow.
Cliff Notes put Classics Illustrated out of business.
I can see that. I can see the correlation, and I
well,
can also
to,
congratulate
to save my
Cliff
soul,
Notes.
I mean, I was reading them on my own at age 6 and 7 because I was able to read. My mother read me, like, the Golden Books and even some of the early comics when I was, like, 2 and 3. She would read to me regularly every day, so I had a real head start on school. So I wasn't reading them as a replacement for reading the text in college or high school. It was my first introduction to literature, and that's so great. I know you have many things other than that are available at that age, too, if people want to inquire. You have all kinds of different places to start into comics
have,
and graphic novels and all that.
We have products for every age range, for every lifestyle, for every interest. Comics and graphic novels have really grown into their possibilities. It is it's right. now a fully imagined medium,
mm-hmm.
Versus what people think they are.
Mm-hmm.
They've really they've gone so much further than the popular assumption of what they are.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still some things that are fun or maybe a little bit scandalous in terms of language, but certainly goes all the way up to some of the best examples of media art available. The first time I realized that it had ascended that level was because of a literary author that I followed, Harlan Ellison, was, I don't know, one of the first science fiction writers to, as such, and of course he's more than just science fiction, but to collaborate with people who are graphic artists to do illustrations of his work, but then also do some original things just for that medium, usually since he was not an illustrator himself, collaborating with other people. And let's see, big-time movies, not just the current sort of comic book superhero movies that are out there, I mean Spider-Man and Batman and that, but Watchmen, did that start as a graphic novel?
Oh, yes, indeed. Yeah. Started as a comic, a miniseries.
Oh.
Originally, the concept was pitched to the writer Alan Moore to revitalize some characters that DC Comics had bought from a publisher that had gone bankrupt. But the concept became so much more fleshed out and edgy, you know, really, really touching on mature themes that that DC decided to take the concepts, the characters that they bought from the publisher, and rename them, kind of re-envision them, to not ruin, in their eyes, what they had bought. So, the Watchmen started as real characters that were, or I should say, real fictional characters, and then were transformed into new characters.
We just want to remind our listeners who might have tuned in a little late, we have a special guest in the studio, Dan Merritt of Green Brain Comics, and also is one of the members and big-time officers of the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority that we're going to talk more about in just a second. But this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. So Dennis and I are talking to Dan, this is one of the glories in general of small businesses. They can, if successful, specialize and then let people know somehow in the community. And, I mean, you have business through the Internet outside this area even, I'm sure.
Well, while we don't do commerce over the Internet.
Oh, you don't do commerce. Okay.
We do have a very dynamic presence on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
We keep a dynamically updated website for informational purposes,
mm-hmm.
As well as using social media, I think, as much as it should be used for local business. It's really to inform and to keep people up to date on not only the products that are available and coming out on a regular basis, but also the events that we are holding at the store.
Now you would, once you inform via your website and your emails weekly, people could call you on the phone and place a mail order. Yes?
Well, you know, we really try to avoid mail order.
Okay.
We really try to
tell us why.
Do the majority of our business in our four walls.
Okay.
First off, I think it's important for a local comic shop, as we like to term our individual stores. I think it's important for a local comic shop to maintain local business, and we focus purely on local business. Our store is a destination, and we really try to mobilize our customers, get them out, come to see us, come and browse. You can go on any number of internet commerce sites and, you know, just click the cart and get the books to you in a couple of days. But you know, the magic of comics is feeling them, touching them, holding them, opening them up, browsing, experiencing the book, and you know, really kind of trying it on.
Well, what I like about small business, too, is the knowledge and how you can get individual help and service. And again, graphic novels and comic books are not, I mean, I highly respect them and admire the work that you do in getting people who are really into it in the way that's right for them. So you have that, and your other staff there have that specialized knowledge. Sort of like the best example of business, of, you know, small appliance business in the old days, Adre Appliance had salespeople that didn't work on a commission and were extremely knowledgeable, and that the general manager over there for many, many years, George Bednar, he made sure that they were up to date on the latest information about the products that they sold and the competing products. And so the salespeople were a wonderful source of information, and that one-on-one was extremely valuable. You go in there, you can talk to them, and they can talk to you. Talk about interactive. I mean, much better than the internet could be in terms of that interactivity.
It's very important for us to interface with our customers, to talk with them and ask their preferences when they're looking for something new. You know, find out what they're interested in, and using our knowledge to match them up with a product that they are going to identify with and be entertained by. I like to use kind of the car salesman analogy. You know, come in and kick the tires. Please don't kick the books, but you know, give it a test run. Mm-hmm. You know, check it out. See if it's for you. All too often, comics have a very illustrative cover, sometimes more illustrative than the inside. The cover artists are not always the artists of the interior pages. So it's important to be able to open that book and see what's inside versus, you know, just what's on the cover.
Yeah, I read a lot, and I do buy via the internet, and sometimes even with the sort of sampling that you can do at some sites like Amazon, you still get books I don't really care for. But if there was just a darn good bookstore here, I mean, I still feel very sad that we lost a little professor in West Dearborn many years ago. It was a West Dearborn parking issue. You have free parking, of course.
We have free parking.
Plenty of free parking in East Dearborn. Okay. Not on Michigan Avenue, per se? Or
yeah.
Is Michigan Avenue free?
We do
over
have
there?
Sites on Michigan Avenue. Okay, yes,
but
indeed.
Certainly right next to your store, there's a small lot, and anybody can park, you know, for most places in East Dearborn without worrying about city paid parking. But besides that, we've lost Borders bookstores. Of course, that was kind of their own fault, the decline of Borders. I was around and used to go in the 60s to the first Borders in Ann Arbor, which was a classic, huge bookstore that, of course, had a lot of built-in business from the college students and the people that read a lot, you know, wanted it to be great. But then their satellite stores, they sort of missed out on marketing, and I think they went way too far into electronic media like DVDs and things and CDs even, which worked for a while for them. But then they just, well, whatever the reason was, we don't have that. We don't have these kinds of things. Loved used bookstores and local bookstores, John King Books down in Detroit, used books. He's one of our WHFR loyal listeners and supporters, by the way. We always get a check from him every year. Small check, but very nice. That's all we need is small checks from a lot of people. And I love browsing these kinds of resources. And I love browsing your store. I haven't been in there, I'm sorry, Dan, for many years.
We have it all on account information, Jay.
I know. Yeah, you track me when I come through the door. There's some sort of automatic GPS there.
You feel a little sting in your hip or something?
Yeah, it's in the neck. No, but it's a little RFID
chip. Like so many of our Dearborn businesses, we're not here to give a commercial to Dan. I'm going to shift into heavy-duty Dearborn business topic in just a second. But local businesses provide, it's true in general, Green Brain and even across the street, Joe's Place, is it?
Jim's
Place. Okay, the Polish related restaurant. Things you just can't find easily anywhere else. And there's so many local businesses. So support local business, small business in Dearborn. The problem is always, I think, for a lot of people, just finding them. Where are they located? What do they represent? And just because they're small or one location only doesn't mean they're not fantastic and great to the customers. And even with Adre, they didn't always have the lowest prices. They tried to match them often for their appliances when they existed. But boy, they had so many other things in terms of customer service and that one-on-one relationship. And And that's what it's all about. Dennis,
you just brought up a great point. Is that I wonder if the perception of the small business is, well, if it was any good, the big guys would have come in and bought it up. You know, and a lot of people look at the box store as, I don't know, credibility or something like that, because it's in every city in America. But the small business store, and I was going to ask you about Small Business Saturday, how things, if you had a lot of a business. What was it, been a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago?
We really got behind the idea of Shop Small Saturday. We thought it was very important to utilize some of the energy that was being put into holiday shopping and divert that into the local economy versus spending it at the big box store where those dollars immediately go out of state.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of facts. Some of them you can dispute, but some of them are just plain indisputable. When you spend a dollar at a local business, 65% of that money stays local. Mm-hmm. That's all spent in the city, in the county, in the state. And it's really important to support the small business, especially in a state like Michigan, in an economy like Wayne County, right outside of Detroit. The number of dollars that we're spending really needs to be considered to stay local. Mm-hmm. And, you know, businesses like mine, that's our 100% focus. You know, that's why we don't do internet commerce.
Right.
It's really important to keep those dollars in the state.
I'm not personally religious, but amen.
Okay. That's our theme on
the
show.
Preaching the business creed that needs to be expressed over and over again. I mean, I know some cities. I go to Austin, Texas a couple times a year for film festivals and music-related things, and one of their slogans down there for local business is Keep Austin Weird.
Hmm.
It's been their slogan, bumper stickers, for years and years, and the core city is that way, is that they are not open to outside franchise businesses, which may or may not be nice and good in their place, but they know the value of local business, and also the nature and the culture of the city is such that they want to keep it uniquely, well, music related especially, but I mean, they've got great local bookstores and music stores that are not owned by anybody but those people that live there. And again, I'm not putting down the other big stores. They're okay maybe for what they are, but again, especially if you're in difficult economic times, it's much better for the city to shop local and small business especially. So what good is the East Dearborn and all downtown development authorities? I've had people from the EDDDA on before here, executive director in the past. But for those people that don't know about that, we still probably have one existing for the West Dearborn area. But what's good about a DDA or an ED in this case for East Dearborn?
Well, first off, the Downtown District Authority is all about promoting local businesses that exist, mm-hmm. And developing economic possibilities to expand that business base.
How is it different from the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce, which has kind of related goals, I think?
Oh, they do. They do have very related goals, but I think they focus citywide. They are inclusive for all the businesses within the city, where the DDA is by charter only allowed to operate within its boundaries, very tight boundaries, and this is the difference. Basically, we're supported by a tax capture in the district, and those funds need to stay in that district and are meant to help develop not only the district for the businesses, but also for the local population.
And what branch of government came up with the idea of a downtown development authority? Was state government?
You know, that's
or
a
federal
good
government.
I'm not really sure of okay. The legal background.
But you're saying that the funds that you have available to help develop and promote East Dearborn downtown are tax capture, which means they really come from the businesses in that area.
The businesses, and there is some of the households that are within the district as well.
Okay. Okay. I know that in West Dearborn, certainly, that businesses pay money to the city, which is a tax capture kind of thing, for special services more than the usual businesses do. I mean, is it a... You pay taxes to the city, of course, as a business.
Yes.
And do some of those go back to the DDA organization?
I believe it's all a tax capture through state taxes.
Well, through state taxes. Of course, you pay state taxes, too, as well as federal taxes and so on, right? Yeah, okay. So what have you done recently for us? What has the EDDA, Ed, done for East Dearborn and Dearborn in general recently?
Well, going back a few years, we worked... very tightly with the Dearborn's City Hall, the Economic and Community Development Catalog for the Economic and Community Development for the development of the corner at Michigan and Schaefer for the Oakwood Medical Center or the
of course,
Dearborn
that's over
Town
there.
Center.
Yeah. And so you're working with Brian Murray of the City of Dearborn, the City of Dearborn's Development Director. Is he on the EDDA?
No, but he works very closely with us.
Okay. Who from the city is on that coordinating group? The mayor himself?
Or the mayor does his assistant? Sit on the board, as well as Mark Guido.
Okay.
But the rest of the board is made up of business people in the district, as well as... people on a more personal level that have a more of a personal stake in the district.
Hmm. Okay. Alrighty. And who's on the what are the businesses who are on the coordinating committee right now besides Green Brain? Mike Bewick, of course, from
Times
Herald.
Mike Bewick is the executive director.
Yeah. Okay.
He's also with the Times Herald. Our chair is John Morgan from Midwest Dental.
Okay.
Our treasurer is Scott Sands, who's one of the property owners along the Schaefer Corridor, as well as we just brought in new members this year, Judith McNeely from Oakwood Medical,
of course,
or Oakwood Healthcare,
big presence there. It's good that they're in the group.
Mm-hmm. It's a major contribution to not only the district but also I think the city.
Mm-hmm.
We just also brought in Jay Cruz from Retro Image, the local vintage furniture resale place, and our pal Paul Flowers from Blick Art Supply. We also have a few other members from businesses in the district. And you know, we're a real dynamic group. We're real positive, and we're constantly working towards the betterment of the district.
So it's sort of the first of all, the area then is Schaefer, maybe up to Warren, but it doesn't include Warren per se.
Our district boundaries go along Michigan from roughly between my store and Oakman towards the west to Schlaff, and we have tighter boundaries along the Schaefer corridor. To the end of the 50-50 block to the north, and oh gosh, what's the just slightly to the south of Michigan on the Schaefer corridor.
Well, you want to make it a very vital shopping district with a lot of choices for people. So if they stop at one place, they can easily walk to others nearby. Right above you, in fact, in your same store location is Stormy Records, which is Wendy and Carl, our good friends here at WHFR for many years, providing a lot of unique music to us and to the community, certainly. That's just another example. Whether or not they're actual members, you probably can represent them pretty well since you see them most every day.
You know, our friends upstairs at Stormy Records, they're great neighbors, they're great people, they're great business, a great addition to the neighborhood. And, you know, losing record stores, we just can't lose anymore. But I do want to say one other thing that's coming up
is a way for the community, of course, to stop by and maybe get some special treats and knowledge. The open house is next Wednesday from 4 to 7 p.m., right, the 14th?
Yes, that's at the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority office.
Which is?
It's right across the
nearby from where?
Right across Michigan from City Hall.
Oh, okay. On the same side of the street there? Oh, right across the north side.
Yes.
But
yes.
Just immediately west of Schaefer.
What is that street? Maple? Is it Maple across the street?
The next one down. You mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
There's more information on the DDA website.
And that's
one of the things that we are working on.
EDDA.org?
It's East Down.
Got to have all the words in there. East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority.org.
Sure.
Okay. Probably if you just Google East Dearborn.
Sorry, Mike and Melissa.
East Dearborn Downtown. Phasing. If you Google or use the search engine for that, they'll get to the website.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we're working on as a long-range goal is we're working in concert with an organization called ArtSpace to bring a a facility into Dearborn somewhere, either east or west. We're looking at many different sites for this opportunity. But it's basically an affordable live workspace for working artists. That is, it's going to be essentially a nonprofit, and it's going to be hopefully within the next 3 to 4 years. You know, we're working on it constantly. ArtSpace is coming in later this month to help us look at potential sites for the facility, and you know, if this happens for anywhere in Dearborn, it's going to be a major plus, because it's not only going to be great for working artists that have an uphill battle, not only making a living doing their work, but also finding affordable workspace.
We've been talking in the last half hour. That's great news. I heard about ArtSpace. The idea came up in the last year, and I'm glad to know it's still an active concept. I think that would be wonderful and a good fit for East Dearborn, if properly developed. And Dan Merritt, I'm sure you'll be on top of that.
Working towards it every day, Jim.
And be sure to keep the WHFR Journal informed with developments on that. We'd love to interview either someone from ArtSpace specifically, or anyone from ED can come by and talk about that too as it comes into fruition, and if it needs public support or whatever, we'll be glad to help.
And if I can, I'd just like to thank not only Mike Bewick for his hard work at the DDA, but also Associate Director Melissa Kania for all their hard work and really helping the business community and the East Dearborn district.
Absolutely.
What he said. Thanks so much, Dan.
Great folks.
Just good people.
We're trying to get on with
excellent
more
citizens
of the new WHFR Journal. Right now we're going to pause, as we usually do, halfway through. Dennis, you have something else you want to add?
No, just glad to be here.
Well, don't we all?
I just wanted to thank Dan.
Hey, well, thank you. Oh, and also, last little plug, this Wednesday, December 14th at my store, from 4 to 7, we're having a local artist, Tony Maiello, signing books. He's got a new book out of his web strip called Gappo the Clown. He'll be there from 4 to 7 this Wednesday. Green Brain Comics, greenbrain.biz.
There you go, .biz. That's really unique, just like WHFR.fm. .biz, B-I-Z, folks.
Saving Detroit's airwaves.
Absolutely. Thank you. And here's some comments from Jim Hightower. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal for December 9th, 2011.
In November's elections, the national media gave extensive coverage to a proposed personhood amendment to Mississippi's state constitution. This extremist anti-abortion ballot initiative declared that a person's life begins not at birth, but at the very instant that a sperm meets the egg. However, extending full personhood to two-cell zygotes was too far out even for many of Mississippi's right-wing zealots, so the proposition was voted down. Meanwhile, the national media paid no attention to another personhood vote that took place on that same day. This was a referendum in Missoula, Montana, on a concept even more bizarre than declaring zygotes to be persons with full citizenship rights. It was a vote on overturning last year's democracy-killing decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in the now infamous Citizens United case. A narrow 5-man majority of the court had decreed that, abracadabra, Lifeless, soulless corporations are henceforth persons with human political rights. Moreover, said the five, these tongueless entities must be allowed to speak by dumping unlimited sums of their corporate cash into our election campaigns, thus giving them a far bigger voice than us real-life persons. Missoulians, of course, cannot single-handedly overrule the Supremes, but they can be in the forefront of a grassroots movement demanding a constitutional amendment to reverse the court's perverse ruling. And that's just what Missoulians did, with a whopping 75% of voters calling on Congress to send such an amendment to the states for prompt ratification. This is Jim Hightower saying, hey, we can all be Missoulians. People in California, Colorado, Maine, Vermont, Wisconsin, and elsewhere are pushing such resolutions. For information on how to get your city and state to join in this call, go to wethepeoplecampaign.org/toolkit. Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org. Getting Congress to act on behalf of the people's interest, especially when it requires members to take a firm stand against the moneyed interests, can't be done by saying pretty please. Congress is a beast. To make it move, you have to whack it with a big stick. Our biggest stick is a riled-up citizenry, and that stick is growing bigger and rilier every day, particularly on issues of corporate arrogance and avarice. As we've seen this year, the American grassroots are catching fire. For example, at January's protest by more than 2,000 people at the Koch brothers' secret billionaire's retreat in the California desert, Wisconsin's mass rebellion against Governor Scott Walker's venomous anti-worker legislation, November's resounding 63% vote in Ohio to repeal Governor John Kasich's union-busting law, and of course, the ongoing Occupy Wall Street revolt. America's citizens' uprising against voracious corporate power is clearly not going away. To the contrary, 76% of the people polled by Hart Research support a constitutional amendment to overturn the Supreme Court's edict that corporations can make unlimited secret donations to buy our elections. The same big majority supports an amendment to make clear that corporations are not people and do not have the rights of humans. Congress is beginning to feel these grassroots rumblers and beginning to move. In the past few weeks, three bills have been introduced in the House and one in the Senate to undo the Supreme Court's damage to our people's democratic rights, including Representative Jim McGovern's bill, H.J. Res. 88, that specifically rejects the fiction that a corporation is a person. As he puts it, people govern corporations, not the other way around. This is Jim Hightower saying, to be part of this big stick of people power, contact www.wethepeoplecampaign.org. What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Kornanek and Dennis Reimar is here as host of our show today. And our second special guest is David Good of the Dearborn Historical Museum. Welcome to the Journal, David.
Thanks very much, Jay.
We have a big event coming up here on campus tomorrow at our conference center right next to our student center on Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road. It looks like, from the research that Glenn O'Cray did, going to be the largest book signing by authors in history. And I'm not sure if Guinness has been told about this, Guinness World Book of Records, of course, but more than 100 authors you expect to have in the Mazzaro Conference Center tomorrow?
Yes, we're calling it the world's largest book signing. If it turns out not to be that, sue us, but we are expecting more than 100 of the authors out of 154 authors who contributed to the book.
And the book we've talked about here on the Journal, we talked about it last week too, and when you were getting stories together, but it is related, of course, to the mission of the Dearborn Historical Museum, and just good for the history of Dearborn too. It's more than 100 individual stories, probably some shorter or longer, about Dearborn. And so it's called Best Dearborn Stories, Voices from Henry Ford's Hometown. I'm seeing the actual physical copy here in front of me for the first time. Beautiful. It looks like a couple hundred pages at least.
It's 382 pages.
Oh my goodness!
But who's
there you
counting?
Go. Yeah, but who's counting? I didn't thumb to the back. And you're selling it tomorrow and also online for $19.95, about $20 each. Make great Christmas presents, folks. And almost all those authors are going to be here at the conference center tomorrow, so people can actually get a real historic document, buy a copy or several, and get the author's signatures. I don't know if there's room for all those signatures. Where are they going to sign the inside cover and the back cover?
They sell
cover
another book for that, right?
We're hoping that they're going to sign where their article begins, right by their byline. Okay. Under the title of the story.
And David, what's your position besides being a volunteer helping to support the Dearborn Historical Museum? Are you a director? It's the first time I've met you, and it's an honor. But
thanks. I'm the chairman this year of the Dearborn Historical Commission, which is a mayoral-appointed body that oversees policy for the museum.
Okay. And the book has two other people that help to edit, that is, select through. And it's an amazing speedy process, too, that has happened in the last 3-4 months to get this together. And the book looks great, even though I haven't had a chance to read any of the stories in there yet. But let's give credit where credit's due to the other two people that helped you editing this book.
Yes, there were two other members of the Historical Commission, Glenn O'Cray and Karen Wisneski. Glenn is a retired, longtime financial services director at the college here.
Yes. And a good colleague of mine for many, many years. I'm retired from here, too. He started almost as far back as I did here in the 60s, I think, and rose to prominence and helped initiate all kinds of special programs to help students attend college, not just here, but also as director of several state financial aid organizations to help students get the information and knowledge on how to get scholarships and loans and federal aid, because college is so expensive these days. I think it should be free. There you go. Alternative opinions here, folks, from the new WHFR Journal. California, I think, was the last state that actually had higher ed free up until Ronald Reagan and the end of the 60s. However you feel about that, I think the people that have the ability, we need to support them completely. Yeah, yeah. What should money have to do with it? If you've got the brains and you want the education and you want to turn around and help the American society be its best, why should money stand in the way? I think it's, again, radical point of view. Although it wasn't at one time, and I know college is expensive, but rightly so. The education is worth so much as a turnaround back into society. It's true. There are exceptional examples like Dan Merritt, who was just here, that he didn't go on to college, but he had this love of a special interest, and he had an opportunity, which not a lot of people have, to sort of slide into a business model that was already set up. But otherwise, you need that college. You need that education, folks. Don't anybody think of dropping out at any point, folks. If you know kids that are thinking, oh, I don't need college, or yeah, you do. You need as much education as you can get, along with your own enthusiasm. Find out what that is and put it into practice. And Dearborn has given, for so many years, the start to so many small businesses and so many careers that have gone on beyond Dearborn. It's great that these stories are pulled together, and you had that special excitement generated, I think, with the short time frame of development to pull this together. Dennis, of course, is our Mirror newspaper editor and knows about writing and publishing over the years, and just an exciting thing to track, hasn't it, Donna?
And my question on this is, the process of collecting all of these stories, weren't some of them verbal?
A few of them were, okay. And they were transcribed.
That's
by
incredibly tedious processes.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Crazy.
Most of them were submitted in typewritten form.
Give us an example of one or two of we can't read them out loud, all of them, but some are relatively short. But I saw the press release on it, and it had a summary of a couple of them, and amazingly interesting stuff.
Well, what I found interesting was that there were stories that we cited about digging up bones in the backyard, breaking into labs to rescue animals, hiding in church after lockup time, sitting in for Henry Ford during a portrait painting, that kind of thing.
Was somebody looked like him, you mean?
No, that was a thing. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't read that one.
It wow. was a thinly built employee who didn't, I guess, look much like Henry Ford facially, but he was able to sit in for much of the portrait painting of the torso part of it.
Oh, that's fun.
Did the Historical Museum have any sort of collection? I thought you were trying to do, Bill Hackett was trying to do an oral history of some of the, I think, the union leaders and some of the automotive business for a while, and that may be part of your resources over there. But have you? Is this the first time you've done a collection of this, of some of the stories, a wide range of stories?
It is. It's not connected with what Bill did. Bill and Glenn O'Cray, as a matter of fact, and I have done long oral history interviews with people like Carrie Guido, the widow of the former mayor Mike Guido, and with Jack O'Reilly, the current mayor, and we're hoping to use these interviews in publication of our quarterly The Dearborn Historian that we're putting out this year for the first time in 3 or 4 years.
Well, this is really something that it's a great idea. It needs to be done. And probably the excitement and success of this, which I'm sure will be true, will cause a second or third edition in the future years to be collected of stories that didn't get in here or people just didn't hear about it because of the time this year. But the more and more people will, I think, say, hey, I got a story too, you know, and write down their name and save them for next time. So we're really happy you came by to help tell our listeners about this. David Good of the Dearborn Historical Museum, one of the three editors, along with Wisniewski and O'Cray, for Best Dearborn Stories, Voices from Henry Ford's Hometown. And it is a bound volume, a quality paperback edition, printed locally, and available now from the Dearborn Historical Museum, I'm sure at the museum, but especially tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. right here at the Henry Ford Community College Conference Center, also known as the Andrew Mazzara Conference Center, right next to our student center, Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road here in Dearborn, from 10 to 4. You can get the signatures from many, if not all. They will all be set up in the I think probably the atrium, the main lobby, maybe a room down the hall, whatever conference rooms are there. Free parking all around the Mazzara Conference Center tomorrow here at the college. And I might get one book or several as Christmas presents.
Yeah, what a great idea for a gift, isn't it?
Yeah, either for people that used to live here and, you know, I've moved away, shame on them, or family and friends for Christmas. Because often, hey, $20, you often spend that anyway, almost without thinking these days.
Right.
Plastic and so on. But come on down tomorrow. By the way, mentioning plastic, people need cash or checkbook. Can they use a charge tomorrow?
We're not set up to take charge cards.
Tomorrow, but at the museum, could they use a charge? No,
we don't. We don't really have that capability.
Okay, hit the ATM, folks, before you come over here. But David, thanks so much for giving us that summary. It is very exciting, and I've already bought my first copy here, but I got to come back tomorrow to get some of those signatures. Oh, boy. Maybe David will sign my book before he leaves. Okay. But thanks so much for being on the Journal today. We just got a couple of other topics and the headlines are in the last couple of moments of the show here. But give him a pen, Dennis, and then let him move along if he likes to. Or you can just sit here while we chatter for the next couple of minutes, because it would be nice to talk to you afterwards. David Good, Historical Museum. Come on by, or be sure to get over to the museum next week. What are the hours of the Historical Museum when, if they can't get here? And I hope they do come to the college tomorrow, the Mazzara Conference Center, Henry Ford Community College, to get the book and the signatures. But what are the hours of the museum next week?
Generally 9 to 5, Tuesday through Friday.
Okay. And almost any time during that time, they could come by and get a copy or copies over there.
Absolutely.
Great. David Good, thanks so much for being on the Journal with us. And I hope this is only the first of many editions of all of the great stories from people that have lived here and are currently living here in Dearborn. In fact, I have a funny one about WHFR that may be a future edition I can sneak in there. I just came to me, but okay. Dennis and I wanted to just hit a couple of other topics from the Dearborn Press and Guide and Dearborn Times Herald that you might want to go to their websites or pick up copies of their papers, as we recommend every week that people should do anyway. We cannot possibly cover all the stories that they do or go as much in depth, even though we try to add a special emphasis and or maybe some critical opinions or even criticisms of what we see. Just from the Pressing Guide last Sunday, let me say there's a big story for a lot of Catholics, but also there must be meaning here for other religious leaders and even educational facilities of choice in the area that many Catholic churches are going to be closing or consolidating in the nearby area. Now, Sacred Heart Church, rather big in Dearborn, that's going to be fine. Their school is going to continue. But the Catholic Church has decided to close or consolidate, for example, St. Albert's in Dearborn Heights and several more. And a lot of the church people quoted in that story, parishioners, have just said, well, that's the way it goes. Can't do anything about it. I guess that's because God told the church to do this, and it just trickled down. And what can you do when God says,
but you know,
you've
got to
close or consolidate your facilities? It's obviously a money thing. It has to do with attendance at the church and the amount of money they collect on Sundays and other times from the parishioners. Just not enough to go around, I guess. So another example of tough times. But, you know, I know a lot of people thought very highly of both elementary and sometimes their high school experiences. I think Divine Child High School and Dearborn Heights will continue.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not sure what the other churches are. I didn't think they gave us a comprehensive list. It's just not just a sign of the times, but there's a real question there about quality education.
Absolutely.
And schools of choice, too, as well as the religious attendance and rituals for those that believe in that.
Did you ever attend parochial
meaning there.
School?
No, I actually joined a religion in college.
Okay.
My parents always felt that, even though I think they took me to some, was it Methodist or Lutheran churches, just for an experience of what church and Christianity was all about, they always said, when you grow up, you investigate, explore, see what has meaning for you, and make your own choice.
Wow, that's good.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it was tough because I discovered hundreds of churches out there, hundreds of different systems of faith, and I did choose one. I don't want to give any endorsement here.
Right.
I want to make a commercial for a nonprofit. And it was great for me in college, and it had a lot of meaning. But then I discovered that what I had discovered in college and was going to college services at several institutions, including University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, it wasn't the church of the multitude. When I got to local parish churches, this is a long story, I better cut it off.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same thing. It didn't have the same meaning, and
right.
I discovered that the large church organization didn't have the goals of a lot of the college parishes.
Okay.
And so I haven't been active practicing.
You were disillusioned.
In that belief. But I think it's very important. To, you know, the spirit of religion is very important, however you want to incorporate it in your life. Well, I think I'm a good scientist, too, but I think there's a lot more we don't know and understand about what's going on in this universe. And a lot of it has to do with the sort of unknowns of spirit and...
No,
and so on.
It's all based on faith. And I totally agree with what you're
saying.
That's
both the problem and the good example.
But what the Catholic Church is looking at is a very practical financial shortage.
Don't have the money.
And when you look at Catholic schools, let's face it. I mean, a lot of the people in Catholic schools aren't necessarily Catholic. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes Catholic schools are in neighborhoods that have, maybe they're not good school district, and so people will go there.
Well, again, we're talking about a social institution too, just for the believers of faith on Sundays, but a lot of things that many churches do to help their community, and with fewer of those institutions and not in the neighborhood, just like a lot of local, of course, one of our local libraries and a lot of local elementary schools have closed in Dearborn, and you lose that sort of whatever it could do for the whatever it had been doing for that neighborhood community.
Absolutely. It takes
sad.
The bite out of the sure.
Right.
You know, I saw, and I'm not making this up, I saw a church for sale by owner, and I didn't know who to call. By owner, hello, God, can I? No, yeah. I mean, what would you?
Church for sale. Often the local churches, I know, when they're closed, they are desanctified.
Sure,
by the church, it's not holy ground anymore.
No,
and they will sell the building. And in fact, where was it? Somewhere in Michigan. I visited a couple Christmases ago. It actually turned the church. They kept the building. They turned it to a restaurant.
Oh yeah, I've seen churches turn into the theaters for plays.
Yeah, yeah. And as long as the building is good, and it's good acoustics usually, why not? It does seem a little strange.
Because you think of a church for one purpose.
Our school elections are going to be changing to, in the future years, to happen in November only. That may mean... may really change the success of millage elections. It may help or hurt funding for schools
but isn't
in the
that
future.
Also every,
it's a state law.
And the state law also, it's only during even years, isn't it? Was that part of it?
Yeah, right. And so that's a problem for many school systems that because the people elected are up for re-election
right.
or whatever, their terms come up in an odd year, not
right.
the even year, or not the big presidential year too.
Right.
So they'll adapt to that. We'll change that. It's actually good in general that more people usually come out to vote, so it will socialize those issues more. But unfortunately, as the school system found, the majority of people don't like to pay any kind of taxes, and it
right.
would hurt. As David Good is sitting here from the Dearborn Historical Museum, of course, there's always those budget problems, and it's great that all the local nonprofits like WHFR, we have to go and find ways to get contributions and to get support. Dearborn Historical Museum, of course, has had success with keeping some funding at least from the city of Dearborn, and we wish you good luck with that effort in the future. If you got to go to a separate millage and for supporting any of it, I'm right there for you, I know, but let's hope that the city sees the importance of a historical museum too and all their activities. And this is, again, your book is a great way to show
creative way.
Support and the importance of that activity, too. Another nonprofit, though, and it's a very sad story in the Times-Herald, only from this last week, Allen Parks Animal Shelter is in great trouble. Their finances, even their future at all, and they were helping a lot of nearby communities down there with their animal population problems, too. It's a terrible story, and if I actually read it all to you, and it's 2:00 now, folks, and time for the journal to wrap up as we're waiting for Joanne Korchinska and Highway 61 Blues to get started. An awful story. If you're living in Allen Park, you know anybody there, get them to turn things around. Maybe you could help set up a volunteer group like we have in Dearborn.
With the Friends.
The Friends for
sure.
The Dearborn Animal Shelter, run it under contract to the city, because I'm sorry, rumors have it, through Dennis and elsewhere, that the city of Allen Park just doesn't know how to run an animal shelter well. Sure, they don't have the money, that's one of the reasons, but they need a group of dedicated people to do it for themselves under contract with the city.
Exactly.
Dearborn discovered the value of that almost 20-plus years ago now.
The shelter in Allen Park is actually the garage of one of the city buildings.
One of the buildings is part of their city garage.
Right.
And it's just not adequate for anything they're trying to do. And now they're, I don't know how many dollars. I thought I read over $100,000 in debt.
I think it's $78,000.
They don't have any way to pay their cost. And they have a few things that are illegal about managing the animals too, as well as health and safety issues in general. And they put, and it's so sad at the